Did you know that your unused medications could end up in the wrong hands? It's important to keep your medications secure in a locked location, such as a locking box or locking cabinet. When it's time to dispose of them, safely and properly dispose of old, expired, or unused meds by using an at-home disposal product or a medication disposal box in your community. Don't miss out on medication take-back events happening near you. Don't let anyone take what's yours. Lock your meds. Be aware. Don't share. Learn more at lockyourmeds.org/NC.
One constant feeling reigns over the 130-plus year history of NC State Wolfpack football. Hope. And when there's hope, well, Pack fans can always relate. Pack family, time for a true look at your team. Expert analysis, special guests, and a Carter Finley-sized bag full of X's and O's. Let's get hooked up for Pack Therapy. Here are your hosts, Tim Donnelly and Wolfpack great Mike Lennon.
Pack Therapy, welcome in. I'm Tim Donnelly. You just heard my co-host Mike Lennon, NC State legend. And this is the first MJ Morris of this year edition recap of Pack Therapy. So we'll just go ahead and start there. But first, like and subscribe everywhere this podcast can be found. It's wherever you're listening to podcasts. Obviously, you found it if you're listening. But just click that subscribe button, comment, check us out on YouTube, all those sorts of things. Tell your friends about it. Now, we can jump into MJ Morris. Not perfect, but there was a spark, right? I think the thing I took away from it was they obviously put him in there for a shakeup, and it felt different, which is kind of mission accomplished. You can get into the details. But, I know you were at the game, right? I was watching on television. On TV, it seemed like the place had a little bit of electricity to it.
Without a doubt, there was a spark and an energy to this offense. And I'm sure to the defense, it felt like, okay, we can take a deep breath. Like, the offense is doing their job, and it's not going to fall on us every single week. Was it perfect? No. But I do think MJ definitely provided a spark. I think having Dylan McMahon back helped. And I thought it was the best game that Robert and I called. They're outside of probably two. I would say there's two times he called a quarterback draw on third and long, which I wasn't a fan of. And then right before halftime, they went three and out. And didn't even, again, called another, I think it was a running back draw on third down. Other than that, I thought Robert and I was great. I thought what they did a great job of is basically we've been asking about this run game. Where's the run game? Where's the run game? Running backs, offensive line. Well, what do? They make Casey Concepcion basically the RB1. And I thought that was great. They got their best playmaker the ball in ways. So between MJ, Anai, this offensive line, everything seemed to be clicking more. And we saw Trent Penich for the first time. So there was a lot of positives from that game.
And I mean, you just named all the guys we want to dive into. We'll start with Concepcion. I jokingly said this, but it's kind of true. Start warming up the NIL stuff for this offseason. He's one of the best freshmen in the country, like full stop. And that in this modern college football world is unbelievably exciting. Watching him like break the long plays and the explosives that he's had in the last 2 weeks is really, really exciting. But then my thoughts immediately go to, like, it would be so painful to watch this guy leave. But it's what he brings to the offense is rare. And now that they've kind of brought it out a few times, it's really, really helpful to the offense.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be what Robert and I, it's going to be fun for him. Like, how many different ways can we get this guy the ball? And, you know, we say MJ Morris brought the spark. It might have been Casey Concepcion, because a lot of those jet sweeps, luckily they're shovel passes for MJ's sake, because they went to his passing yards and helped his completion rate. But I thought that this guy is electric. Mm. He's going to help this team win games, but then at least two. Can they keep him? Yeah. which is a crazy thought, that as a true freshman, you're already having to worry about keeping him. Typically, you're like, man, we got this guy for the next 3 years. Yeah. I guess maybe two if he's that good. But now it's like, better enjoy it while you can, because we don't know if we'll have it next year.
Just get those collectives warmed up. And I mean, I actually think, and I've seen this at other schools, it's easier. I don't want to say easy, because those, like, you know, people parting ways with their cash is never easy. But the collectives, I believe, have an easier job putting money together when there's like a specific purpose. When you're just saying like, hey, help the program, help us with NIL, it's like, what? And when you come in and say like, hey, we need X amount of dollars to keep this explosive player, like, can you help? I think it's a bit easier. And I'm just putting that out there. Casey Concepcion is the specific player because he's, you know, his open market value will be high. But I want to, like, you brought up Robert Anai a few times. You know, as a football junkie, sometimes you see, like, you know, the Packers with Devontae Adams were this way, where you know, you're going, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw it to him 15 times a game. How do defensive coordinators not figure it out? And then you go and you study what LaFleur at the time or McCarthy or whoever was doing it before. And it's to me, if I'm Robert Anai, those are the offenses I'm looking for now, right? Concepcion is no longer like a breakout, going to sneak up on you type of guy. He's going to be circled on the scouting report, and they have to be creative and go find, you know, hey, how do the Dolphins keep scheming open Tyreek other than he runs a 4-2 or whatever it is? Like, what are they doing to get these guys open? Because that's the challenge now.
It is the challenge, but I almost feel like it's easier with a guy like Concepcion than a guy like Devontae Adams, for example, or Justin Jefferson, where they kind of – they're more of an outside receiver, so – where they line up is typically how they line up. You know, a lot of the times these offensive coordinators are using formations, again, shifts, motions, different ways to get one-on-one matchup. It's a lot easier to do that with a guy in the slot like Concepcion. True. Because you can bring him.
Yeah,
you can bring him in all sorts of different places, start him in the backfield, move him out, start him one side of the line of scrimmage, move him to the other. So there's way more ways to get creative with a guy like that. So, you know, going into the season, we kind of wondered who that guy would be that could be a nice kind of, you know, chess piece where he can move around. I think that's what it's going to be. And last week we saw the jet sweep. This week it might be something completely else. I mean, shoot, they might actually line him in the backfield and just hand him the ball off on an outside zone run and see what he can do with it.
One of the other guys that preseason I thought might be kind of one of the big difference makers was Trent Penix, because of kind of what you said. I mean, he's been in the backfield, he can move him around, and you know, I had these optimistic visions of Robert Anai and at the time Brennan Armstrong bringing this really creative offense, and Penix seemed like a really creative piece. We finally saw a bit of that. He had obviously the two big plays. I thought those were the two best play calls I've seen from Robert Anai in quite a while. Is that something that's sustainable, or is that something that Penix kind of, I don't want to say lucked into, but those are more gadgety plays that you can't use that often?
Right. I think they are more gadgety plays because they're both kind of the fake the bubble screen and go, and it's the same play we saw Casey Concepcion score against Virginia.
Yep.
So yes, scouting report is going to circle Casey Concepcion, and they're going to practice every variation of a screen, a stock block and go there is. You know, when Duke's practicing this week, that's going to be a point of emphasis, is do not get beat on this kind of fake bubble screen and go. So it was great to see Trent Penix. You see the speed. I mean, he was out the gate, and I also give MJ Morris credit, because that ball was like a long handoff. That ball was right on the numbers, didn't have to slow down at all. And when you get a guy like Trent Penix in the open field like that, you show what he's capable of.
He was over 20 on the GPS, over 20 miles per hour, which is for a big guy. That's hoofing it down the field a little bit. Let's talk MJ Morris, the interceptions, because that's the like, you look at the game, you see they scored 48 points, right? The offense had explosive plays. These are all things we're looking for, but you throw in the turnovers and it puts a little bit of a damper on it. What'd you think of the turnover worthy plays? Let's go one by one here.
One by one. Okay, we'll start with the first one. Some people will blame the receiver. I put that one on MJ Morris. It doesn't get any easier than an inside slant route versus outside leverage with no hole player in the middle. I mean, that's a throw. The first play of routes on air usually every day is a slant route, and this is an even closer slant route. I mean, it just doesn't get any easier. So did it hit Casey's hands? Yeah. It would have been a great catch. I mean, that was a fingertips. Mm-hmm. You got to hit him in the chest there, and that's
probably
easy first
down. Running, yeah. I'll throw this out there. First play, he would like that. He could have been trying to throw the change up. It would have come out 100 miles an hour. You know what I mean? He was obviously a little antsy. And it's what I will say is the first pass of the game, the jitters were obviously there. I think they tried to scheme open like you said, the easiest throw in the playbook for him, and it was there. And he was just a little antsy, and he threw it 100 miles an hour. And as receivers will tell you, those in breaking routes right over the ball, like, little touch goes a long way there. You break fingers and things. So I don't like it. It is on him. I agree. Ball placement, but it's a little bit more understandable than, you know, if this was his fifth game of the year and he was just out there in rhythm. Like,
correct.
He wasn't in rhythm yet.
There was definitely the jitters, I'm sure. And like you said, that ball was coming out hot.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to show off the gun.
Yeah.
There's going to be moments, MJ.
So, yes, I understand. You know, I'm sure that first start, there's some pressure there. But we can't just blame it on that. I mean, it still falls on MJ. And then the other, you know.
The next one, the screen that got pick sixed, returned for a touchdown, that I don't think is on MJ at all. That's like a trust your teammates, you have to let it go.
It's 100% on either the receiver's blocking or a huge tendency in this offense that when they line up in a bunch formation out by the numbers really wide, that's what they're running is a bubble screen. As a quarterback, you're looking, do I have an advantage throwing this? Do we have two guys blocking and one guy catching? If we have two on two out there to block, we're throwing it all day. That's not, it's just a numbers game. It's just basic math. You add up how many guys are out there compared to how many we have, I'm throwing it. I'm not looking to see if the guy jumps it. Also, it was a high snap, which gave the DB a little more time to break on it. That is not on MJ at all. And if fans think that the quarterback has time to look out there, no, that's 100% trust play that you have trust in the receiver is going to make that block.
And quite honestly, that probably led to some of the screen and ghost type stuff we saw later on. If you're a play caller and you see defensive backs breaking that aggressively on a screen, you're really upset that it got intercepted for a touchdown, but you're also thinking like, okay, we got one, right? They're trained to come up and take away our screen game, so we have a counter for that. It's like when you see a defense over pursuing and you know you have a counter or reverse in the playbook, you're like, all right, so I'm gonna wait till I need it, and then I have that play. So that one. And then the third, the weirdest tip to the line of scrimmage pass I've seen in a while. And I said this on my afternoon show. I don't know what the physics behind it are to throw a spiral, have it get tipped by a stationary hand, and have it go back to being a spiral on the other side, just a further pass, just basically change the trajectory of it. But balls tipped at the line of scrimmage are really hard to put on the quarterback unless they, you know, everyone, like, unless you have like a Philip Rivers motion and you're 5'10 and you know it's coming out low, then it's really not on you.
Right. Sometimes there's a history of guys that have a history of getting a lot of balls batted down, and that might be because of their mechanics of a long delivery or what you're mentioning with Philip Rivers, where it's kind of a low delivery. That's not on MJ. That's just part of the game, and those things are going to happen. So yes, of the three, I put one on MJ. The other two, one's on the receivers and one's just bad luck.
You just hope your offensive line, right, when those hands go in the air, get a couple rib shots in to make them think about doing it the next time.
Right. That's what they're coming back. The offensive line coach should be saying, hey, next time hit them in the ribs.
There you go.
Hit them where it hurts and get those hands down.
By the way, we're going to talk about the defenses. This is going to be a kind of two-parter pod. We're going to talk about Duke also. There's a big game coming up. But the last thing of the offense I want to talk about, and I know you and I feel similarly about this, is Brennan Armstrong in for a play. To me, that's a two-part story. One, I don't like the coaches putting him in for a play, especially down on the goal line, especially then that play call. If you're putting him in and you're going to run quarterback power and you're just trying to take a hit off of MJ Morris, fine, like I can deal with that. And I'm sure that's what they were thinking, the defense was thinking, right? Like, oh, we're putting Brennan Armstrong, they're going to expect the run, then they called the pass play. But I don't like taking MJ off the field, right? As team first as everyone is, you want to be in the game on the goal line. Like, you want to be in on the touchdown scoring plays. And MJ, I'm sure, would never say that out loud. But, you know, as someone that's been in that situation where you get pulled for the wildcat down on the goal line, you're like, oh, man, it messes with you a little bit, even if you forget it right away. So I just don't like taking MJ off. But then the second part of that is after the sack, again, you were in the stadium. You could hear it on television, which means it was a loud boo. They booed. Some are saying the play call, some are saying the decision to put him in, some are saying Brennan Armstrong. It was obvious after the game, based on what Peyton Wilson said, that the players saw it as booing Brennan Armstrong, and that's, I mean, I don't think there's a place for that in your fandom.
It was absolutely ridiculous. Let's start with the play call. That would probably be the third thing that I didn't love what Robert and I did, is they got in that T formation. It's like, MJ can do that. Again, if you want to run quarterback power, I understand it. And I understand your logic, too, of not wanting to take the guy out. And, you know, it's fun when you walk off, you jog off on the sidelines and everyone's kind of patting you, yeah. whether it's handoff, and MJ let him down there and then he doesn't even get to be the one. So I do understand that. But if you're just going to run that T formation, leave MJ in. If you're going to run quarterback power, I'm fine with that. And then the play call, the pass play, I also saw fans saying that the running back was wide open and flat on the other side. You are absolutely crazy if you think you're expecting the quarterback to run a play action to the left. That was basically Spider 3 wide yeah. banana in John Gruden's world. And the back on the flat on the backside is just a decoy to try to get him out. He cannot see that. That his back is turned the other way. That is absolutely crazy if you think he can see that guy is going to be wide open.
And if he does get there, the offensive coordinator is going, oh, you don't have the playbook. Like, yeah, yeah. You're playing.
The linebacker recess. That had him in man just didn't go with him. You're like, you don't know that's happening when your yeah. back's turned. So, and then the fans booing. One, I'll start with Payton Wilson. That was one of the coolest things that I've seen mm-hmm. since being at NC State, you know, coming here as a player and being an alum. That was incredible. I thought the leadership he showed, the words he spoke were yeah, so well said between, you know, acknowledging what a great fan base is, but how we need to rally around Brennan. And I think that's a lesson for the fans. Whether you're booing the player call or not, it still feels like it's the player, especially in that situation. And it's just like, grow up. Like, yep. this is not, you know, and a lot of it, I will say, it felt like a lot of it came from the student section.
Well, my thing is, like, what did you want? Right? Like, the previous weeks where they were chanting MJ Morris and things, like, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I at least see what your goal was.
Yeah.
Like, you wanted MJ Morris back in the game. You wanted your opinion heard. I don't think that's the way to go about it, but whatever. This one, it was like, he already lost his job. Like,
yeah.
What was your, you just wanted him to know that you didn't like it?
Yeah,
you
that's it's just wrong. He's one of us. I think Payton just said it great. He's given it all. He's a hard-nosed player. He's a good kid. He's a leader. He took the benching well. Like, that's just, there's no place for that at NC State.
I think that's the right way to put it. There's no place for it. So we'll go ahead and take a break. But when we come back, we're going to focus in on the defense and get to what Duke's bringing to the table this weekend. Big game for NC State, and their defense gave up 41 points with some context. We'll give the context coming up next.
More great news for Cary commuters. With the new GoCary app, you can track your bus live on the interactive map feature. Stay informed with the latest news and service updates right at your fingertips. Save your favorite locations and routes for quick and easy access, making your daily commute a breeze. Plus, with the GoCary app, you can easily connect to GoCary.org for even more resources and information. Best of all, the GoCary app is absolutely free to download on the Apple and Google Play stores. GoCary, where getting there is just a tap away.
Are you ready to buy or sell your home? The Jim Allen Group is a nationally recognized and award-winning real estate team in the Triangle, dedicated to providing exceptional service to meet your needs. With the latest insights and expert market knowledge, they'll make your home buying and selling journey as smooth as possible. Don't wait. Head over to jimallen.com and start your next move today. That's jimallen.com. The Jim Allen Group, your partner in real estate.
All right, welcome back into the Pack Therapy Podcast. We broke down quite a bit of the offense and MJ Morris in the first half. Let's focus defense. This is the way I'm putting it. If a talented defense that is one of the best in the country gives up 41 in a Power 5 conference, gives up 41 points to a Group of 5 opponent, it's time to ask some questions. That's not to say that all those questions are going to be the defense didn't play well. The answers are going to be more complicated than that. But 41 points is a lot of points for NC State to give up to Marshall. The caveats being pick 6 doesn't really fall on the defense. Another 7 points off of a turnover that set him up in a tough situation. But Did you see anything different about the defense this week that maybe you hadn't been seeing in the past?
I thought they were a little uncharacteristic sometimes. Again, it just the run fits weren't great. There were some times where I thought Marshall did a good job blocking it up. But the 41 points, like you said, I don't think was completely representative yeah. of that game. The pick six, a bunch of short fields,
yep.
Dealing with the turnovers. And really, there was a lot of three and outs by the offense. There wasn't long sustaining drives. And even those the touchdowns were big explosive plays, so that can be tiring on a defense when it felt like our defense was out there a lot more. And then on the other side of it, I thought Marshall's quarterback is a good player. I liked him. He's only a sophomore. I would expect him to be a guy that could be in the transfer portal this year and move on up. And the thing about the way he played is, one, he's a good athlete, so he made some plays outside the pocket. And two, he had really good touch on the ball. And if NC State plays a lot of zone coverage, they also play their fair share of man and cover zero where they're heating him up. But when you play a lot of zone coverage, if you can kind of have that soft touch to get it over linebackers, over cornerbacks, in front of the safeties, that – it makes it tough on the defense. And I thought he played with a lot of good touch. So there were some plays there that I think you just have to give Marshall credit for as well.
That's obviously Fancher, the guy you're talking about. And also, you know, I've had some experience covering Marshall in the past. Ali, their running back, he has had some medical issues, didn't play last year. But if his medical's passed, he's an NFL guy. Like, he'll get a shot at the next level just based on production. I'm not saying he'll be like a, you know, day two draft pick or anything like that, but he'll make a roster. So I'm sure the scouting report was heavy on, let's make sure we bottle this guy up. And then when the quarterback makes plays and you know, your number one on the scouting report is someone else, that's, you know, like you said, sometimes you just have to tip your cap. I also want to point this out. Because I was almost surprised that you gave up 41 points. We just mentioned all the reasons why, that it's not just you gave up 41. But the studs on NC State's defense still played like studs. Peyton Wilson, 14 tackles, a sack, and a fumble recovery, and showed off a little bit of the wiggle once he got the ball in his hands, because, you know, it's always exciting to see a stud defensive athlete, you know, make a couple guys miss. He kind of got going east and west, but still impressive. Davin Van, 6 tackles, a sack and a half, and a forced fumble. He is quickly becoming one of my favorite players. He, you know, was on that athletics freaks list at the beginning of the year, and it's starting to show. And then Robert Kennedy. I talked about, I had some history covering Marshall in the past. It's because I was covering Old Dominion at a previous job, which is where Robert Kennedy came from, transfer guy. He's kind of just Johnny on the spot, and it's been that way. And I wasn't sure it was going to translate, because I'm like, oh, how often is, you know, the ball just going to pop into his hand at NC State like it did at ODU? Or how often is he just going to be Johnny on the spot on an interception? This was one of those games. He got the interception. He forced a fumble, recovered it, and if he wasn't down as he picked it up, it would have been a touchdown. Robert Kennedy's kind of all over the place, I'm sure you've seen it. There are certain defensive players that it's like unexplainable how often they get the ball in their hands, and he's one of them.
Yeah, I think he is a guy that is just extremely reliable, and he's in the right spot. And I think when you're in the right spot, the ball tends to find you. So, yes, he's been a huge part of this defense, getting him as a transfer. I've been, you know, those three have been kind of the guys I've stood out the most. Not to say there's not other guys on the team that are playing very well.
Corners are playing well.
They are. Yeah. And I don't think we can talk highly enough about Peyton Wilson. It's clear as day. If you watch the game, number 11 looks different out on the field than anybody else. I would imagine he's playing about as good, if not better, than any linebacker in the country. And Davin Van continues to show up. I mean, he's a big guy. I don't know if it's wearing the number one or what, but he looks big, and he has a relentless motor, and he's playing really well. So although the defense wasn't quite as sharp, it was great to see the offense kind of pick them up, because, you know, at the end of the day, I think this does kind of go back to our conversation last week of maybe MJ makes them one score better, and this ends up being a one score game. And hopefully some NC State fans had the spread at maybe 6.5, and it was a nice cover, if not a push, if you got it at 7. But I feel like the defense is now, you know, realizes that, like I mentioned, they don't have to play perfect. And at the end of the day, this defense is going to keep NC State, I believe, in just about every game this year.
And just to touch on what you said, I used to think the big defensive linemen wearing the single digits looked goofy. I remember Florida State had a couple when it was like the new thing. UNC had a couple, and I was like, oh, that looks gross. Now it does. It makes them feel like way bigger. The single digits aren't exactly slimming, so Van does look pretty big. Let's look at Duke. Big game on the road, down the street, however you want to call it, at Wallace Wade, which is a more raucous environment than probably was when you played there. Third night game, Clemson to open the season, Notre Dame on a big game day game, and now a crosstown rival. Riley Leonard trying to play, which, you know, when I saw him laying on the ground grabbing his ankle at the end of the Notre Dame game, I didn't think it was a possibility. Would you rather face Riley Leonard hobbled, or would you want Henry Beilin, their backup, to take over?
As a State fan, I would want the backup in.
Yeah.
Because hobbled Riley Leonard is better than a guy that's, I believe, played in three games, and he's never started one.
Correct. Riley's been durable, which is
so
tough.
So if you're Tony Gibson, you're salivating at the option to get after a guy in his first career start. I do think Riley Leonard's an X factor in this game. If he doesn't play, I love Save's chances. If he does play and he's hobbled, I think it's going to be a good matchup. If somehow he's normal Riley Leonard, I think Duke has the advantage.
If he's normal Riley Leonard, then he's the we got to talk about the acting job with the ankle at the end, the sour face with the crutches.
I agree.
I was like, it's a month. I agree.
And it still might be.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
Maybe they're keeping it tight lips of what's going on there. So yes, I agree that the injury looked like a bad ankle sprain.
Yeah,
that
he would be out. My stomach for the young man.
4 to 6 weeks would have been my guess. So I'm curious if we see him or not. He's obviously a very good player. In my opinion, he's almost a better athlete than he is a thrower right now.
Which is why I think it would be interesting to see how Tony Gibson would handle it if Leonard is playing. And he was throwing, I guess, on Monday, doing the beginnings of movement on Tuesday. So it's like, how would he handle – because if you watch Duke this year, when they need a play, it's been Riley Leonard running the ball. If that is less available, I'd be interested to see – I mean, I like Tony Gibson when he kind of gets that forget it, let's go, and just starts bringing pressures and being creative with the exotic blitzes, and you see some of the guys coming out of the sky, out of the secondary. If we see that Tony Gibson, it could be a really fun game to watch.
It will, and I think...
Even if it's Beilin, the backup, you're probably still thinking...
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Then you were setting the house, and I think with his Riley's, if he's limited, then I think he's... Because he wants to escape. Mm-hmm. That's where he's at his best, is when he gets out of the pocket and can run. I mean, he's a great player. He's 3 touchdowns on the season. I mean, through 5
through
games,
yep.
3 touchdowns passing. And they're all to Jordan Moore. That's not exactly lighting it up.
And at least one of them, again, I watched that Notre Dame game like closely to prep. They did the whole shift pre-snap motion. And he could have punted, he could have kicked it to him. It was a 2-yard touchdown pass with nobody within 20 yards of him, which is pretty difficult to do.
Right. So I do think that Tony Gibson matches up well. At the same time, I love Mike Elko and what he does with that defense. It's a similar style of mix up the coverage, get after the quarterback with exotic pressures. So it's going to be a lot for MJ Morris to handle as well. I mean, only a few starts under his book. I didn't see a whole lot of pressure from Marshall last week. And this offensive line has shown on tape that they've struggled to pick up some of these blitzes. Mike Elko is going to have some things dialed up for him.
That the defensive line is impressive for Duke. I think one of the more underrated units in the ACC is their secondary. I remember watching the Clemson game, and I came away with the Clemson-Duke game at the beginning, which so many people watched. It was that Monday night game. Thinking, right, this is how you get excited as an ACC fan. I remember thinking, oh, Clemson doesn't have any wide receivers this year, which is so rare because they've had so many, and it was like such a nice breath of fresh air. Like, they couldn't even get open against Duke. They have no wide receivers. And then as the season's gone along, it's like, oh, actually, there's not many guys getting open against Duke, which is a credit to Mike Elko, as you said, but also a challenge for... I mean, we know the guys, right? The Porter Rooks, the Casey Concepciones, the Trent Penix, the guys that are going to be the Julian Grays, the guys that are Lassanes, the guys that are going to be out and trying to get open for MJ Morris. It's going to be a challenge for them. There's going to be moments where, it's dude defense, where Duke's, I got this dude, you got that dude, you got that dude, and you just got to win your one-on-one and MJ has to find you. And that's a challenge in a game like this.
It is going to be a challenge. And I think, on a positive note, I think it was good what Robert and I showed, and we'll see what he comes up with this way or this week with ways to find a way, in particular to get Casey the ball. And then on the other side of the ball, I think Duke has got some playmakers too. They got 2 good running backs. They got 3 good receivers. This is going to be a challenge that I think people just think because it's Duke, they don't have a bunch of dudes. they got a great coach, and they got some dudes on the outside and a potential NFL quarterback as well.
We'll see how long you have to deal with that coach at Duke. We'll see. We'll see. I have a feeling everything we just complimented Coach Elko on is being discussed at Michigan State and Northwestern and everywhere else that might have an opening. Just saying, he doesn't have to accept the offers, but I guess the offers are coming. Mike, appreciate it as always. We're gonna have some cool things coming up here. So subscribe, like if you like this, tell your friends. Pack Therapy this episode. See ya.
Jake, I'm getting worried. My house hunt's taking longer than expected. We've made so many offers and keep losing out.
You could really use the JAG advantage.
What's the JAG advantage?
The Jim Allen Group, number one real estate team in the state since 1996, with the largest inventory of home sites in the Triangle, 11,000. And they rep more than 65 communities.
The Jim Allen Group? Oh, I get it. The JAG advantage.
Can score with the Jim Allen Group at thejagadvantage.com. Equal housing opportunity.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.